NPR Berlin presents a podcast special, Poetry Crossings. Four Berlin-based poets recorded live at the Studio Niculescu on the evening of Sunday, February 6th. The event brought together a sampling of both English and German language poets now living and working in Berlin, and gave the audience an opportunity to hear their work and to sample a cross-translation of one poem by each. The event was organized and produced by the Studio Niculescu, an intimate performance space for the arts located on the Oranienstrasse in Kreuzberg. The producers wanted to create an intersection for the English-speaking and the broader German literary communities in Berlin, encouraging poets to get acquainted with each other's work through translation, but also allowing the predominantly bilingual audience to experience live poetry in both languages in an informal setting. On this podcast, we'll hear a reading by two English and two German poets, and the translations each has done of the work of another. First, on Poetry Crossings, we're introduced to the English poet Alistair Noon. Reporter Simon Young spoke with him briefly before the event.
I first came to Berlin in 1989, and I've been living here more or less continuously since 93. This is where I live, this is where I write, this is where I do everything else. That's it, really.
Do you have a real job as well?
I do. I'm basically a translator from German to English. For a while I was working at the Charité, and so I was at the hospital and translating and editing neuroscience and medical texts, and now I work for lawyers, so it's legal English that I work on.
It's a long way from poetry, though.
Well, without wanting to get too highfalutin about it, of course, the classic example of somebody who combined legal forms of language and, well, not poetry, but you know, literary writing is Kafka. You know, he worked for an insurance firm, okay. Spent all day long working on these insurance contracts, and then at night, you know, when his dad wasn't being nasty to him, you know, writing his stories. I think it's a kind of a truism of criticism on Kafka that, you know, that these insurance contracts and the kind of, you know, the convoluted syntax of these things, and yet they were kind of convoluted but still had to be clear, you know, that had an influence on his writing.
And what are we doing here tonight?
I'm going to be reading mostly from a new chapbook, which is called Some Questions on the Cultural Revolution, and there are some poems connected with China in that. There's also a sequence called Six Train Rides and a Written Complaint, which is a kind of, you know, kind of railway poems. I'll be reading a poem about dogs, which Jan Wagner has also translated, and he'll be reading in German at the end. And I'll be reading my translation of a poem by Monika Rink called Friedrich Nietzsche Considers Love, because the basic setup of the thing is we've all translated one poem by somebody else who's reading tonight.
Alistair Noon, the first of four poets on this special podcast from NPR Berlin, Poetry Crossings. Here's a portion of his reading, including his translation of a poem by German poet Monika Rink.
I'll begin with a poem which Jan has kindly translated. I'm kind of beginning at the end. Survival strategies of minor dogs include, one observes, the preemptive bark. Taller rivals will stand there, still as logs, watching the bared fangs of the footlong shark, which strains at the leash, lead weight on a chain, threatening to sprint the 5.5 metres. And from some region of that canine brain, thoughts growl, back off, you will never defeat us. Although those lesser hounds are known to bite the legs of larger breeds who think they're chief, it still remains an asymmetric fight. The bigger dogs retain their bigger teeth. For when the hunger gets too much and forces meet and struggle over the protein sources. So I'm going to be basically reading from that last book, which was mentioned, thank you very much, which is called Some Questions on the Cultural Revolution. And I'll begin with a poem which it's called To a Friend in Iron Tree City. Iron Tree City is a kind of a very loose, rough translation of the name of a city in Sichuan province, which is where there was a big earthquake, you might remember, 3 or 4 years ago. The name of the city is Panzhihua, means Iron Tree City, and it's so cool because there's a plant in the region which grows called the Iron Tree, and which blooms about once every 100 years. To a friend in Iron Tree City. In the town where you quarry and smelt, the bushes preen black feathers. Along the twin valleys, wriggling sides, the slag accrues and the sulphides rise. New highways curve and cleave. The next hill, always beyond, a detonation splashes round the ridges. No time to rest, the panting trucks reverse to spill rocks. New Year cracks and whistles in the haze. But warmth and sunshine make a microclimate against the surrounding winter and rain. The southern tangerines look loose and dry, but unpeeled to a juice just right. Is the punk still drumming? Is Five Winds grumpy and devising dangerous blogs? Do American quake simulation bands still flip when the fans don't clap? Does the bulldog still look doleful? Is Lily gambling with the cops? I'm glad no hills and walls tumbled, that the trucks load bricks, not rubble. Here, where the pitchers have settled, I think my mattress shuddered. From out of ferns the great lizards trod. I saw thin yellow wings follow concrete steps up the hillside where iron trees blossom. Once in a century, expect fossils. I'm going to read a just slightly longer piece here. It's kind of five small parts, which is called The Photo Flies to the Land of Morals. The Land of Morals is, again, a loose, rough translation. Well, it's kind of a translation of a translation. It's the Chinese name for Germany is Deguo. Guo means country. De is a kind of a phonetic rendition of Deutschland. But the actual meaning of it is something like morals. So Germany, the land of morals. And, yeah, bizarre. And the poem is based around the photograph that I saw on page one of the Süddeutsche Zeitung about 3 years ago, at the time of one of the Chinese National People's Congresses. And the caption of this photo was "Tea Time in Peking." And the poem begins with a quote with the rest of the actual caption to this photo. So some really are more equal than others. At least the leading members of the Communist Party don't have to worry about their tea during the sessions of the Chinese People's Congress in Peking. Hostesses keep replenishing their cups with hot water. 1. Trampling the overnight snow, whoever you are that delivers yesterday to this morning, in your all-weather jacket bearing the stories I need to know, you bring me an idea of order. The porcelain mugs of delegates, attentive at shining desks, and the red jackets and black slacks of young women adding hot water. The image waits like a nail in the hills, an ore to find and smelt, a wire to draw, straighten, cut, grind at the top for the head, then trade, drive and retail. Adam, the first capitalist, labour divider, would have known it. My part's the table, the kettle's at work, the leaves have the pot, rocks in a dark pit. 2. Of the 12, one wears gold epaulettes, one zebra-striped lapels on blue. The rest remain in dark suits, a style that brews no dissent. They thumb the numbered directives. The one in the act of sipping has strewn his hair across his patch, seaweed clinging to a wet rock. They are about to recognise private property. They sip and sit. Backs to the lens, the secretaries of tea ascend the cinematic stairs, trimmed by runners, extend their hands to a mug. The bosses hunch in focus. The hostesses, three, are blurred. On the right, on the left, the red jackets march in this constructivist fresco, ladder of metal edging, office block seen from one side. 3. Under the delegate's wings, the taxi driver slurps from a jar. The opening door, ni chunar. Tea leaves swirling all day around, the five-lane circulars, growth rings that burst with haze and fumes, and the enormous tragedy of the motorcade. Passengers pour hot water from street boilers in each coach, to each their convenience noodles. And the same floral flasks top up in households, halls, hotels, from Kashgar to Higher Bin, the lidded mugs, the porcelain pots, the see-through plastic cups. 4. Over and above this congress hangs the red star, with sickle, hammer and space for the microchip. Over and above this hall and the minority headdresses come from the nail-bearing hills, the grasslands and plateau, the lands of the water wheel, a jet trail falls apart behind the delegates above roads that jam the nostrils. Coffee progresses down the aisle. An in-flight magazine reports how a red giant must implode, collapse to a white dwarf, and then into a black hole. 5. Durgwa, the land of morals. Towards the Prussian walls and Foster's glass dome, along the taut walkway, the delegation strolls. Over water that curves and glistens, towards levels of buildings linked inside buildings, behind glass, fronts for offices, tennis courts, and abstract expressionism. That evening, they attend the show at the House of World Cultures, a thin shell structure that closed for a film to film a vision of total reproductive control. Standing in their crimson blazers, the young Bulgarians and Brazilians hang notes in numbered lines. No audience's heads in the morning, papers just the dancers' faces. And I'll round up here with my translation of a poem by Monica. Friedrich Nietzsche considers love. Hear that? It's the jeering of the honey transcripts, Snow White and Mega Blue. The radiators are scuffling with hydrants on the hiking trails, I hear. And the moggy is licking its underside, fluffy in the marble quarry. Get well soons to third parties, please. The cable car crankshaft starts to coo. Friedrich Nietzsche lives here. With his ukulele, he warms up his voice on the first take of his basic lecture. Heiser, an alpine hit, it's subcutaneous. The disparate as doctrine, the key, E minor. Robert Walter, Friedrich Nietzsche wasn't. What? What wasn't I? You weren't loved, and you held that against us all. The perfidious revenge of the rejected. In the meantime, hikers are tucking into a second breakfast. Wurst, berries, William's pear, the local schnapps. Friedrich Nietzsche and the gentle master of remorse converse in stackable chairs. About onions? Contacts? Are their words blows to the head with a paper fan? Or a hinged chisel coated with camellia oil? Who knows? They speak in low tones. The hills are alive with their grumbles. Friedrich Nietzsche considers love. Robert Walter smiles without a word. Thanks very much. Have a nice evening.
Alistair Noon, reading from his work, and also a translation of a poem by another of our poets, Monica Rink. Alistair Noon has translated a book of her poems recently for Bark Press. She spoke briefly with Simon Young before the event.
It's always interesting to test new poems in front of an audience and see if they work or not. I'm always trying to have at least one poem I've never read to anybody at each reading. I mean, those are all poems which belong together for me in a way, and I started working on them last summer.
Monica Rink lives in Berlin and is one of the city's best-known poets. She's won a number of distinguished prizes for her work, most recently the Rhein-Frank Poetry Award for 2009 and the George K. Glaser Prize in 2010. Here she is, recorded at Poetry Crossings, reading the poem we just heard translated by Alistair Noon, called Friedrich Nietzsche Considers Love.
Friedrich Nietzsche denkt an Liebe. Hört ihr das? So Höhlen Honig, Protokolle schneeweiß und überblau, auf den Wanderwegen heißt es, raufen Radiatoren mit Hydranten. Und im Marmorsteinbruch leckt die Mieze ihre Unterseite flockig. Genesungswünsche richten sich an Tritte in der Seilbahn Gurt, die Antriebskurbel. Hier wohnt Friedrich Nietzsche. An der Ukulele singt er seine Propädeutik ein. Heißer, ein subkutaner Alpenschlager, ungleichartiges als Glaubenslehre der Grundakkord E-Moll. Robert Walser sagt, Friedrich Nietzsche wurde nicht. Hä? Was? Was wurde ich nicht? Du wurdest nicht geliebt, daher dein Groll. Die perfide Rache eines Ungeliebten. Indes Eingekehrte laben sich an Bretterljausen, Wurzen, Bären, an Williams Christ, an Enzian, Friedrich Nietzsche und der sanfte Reuemeister konversieren in Stapelsesseln. Sind es Zwiebeln? Sind es Kontakte? Oder Hiebe mit dem Fächer? Ist's ein Fitschenbeitel in Kamelienöl gehüllt? Wir wissen's nicht. Sie sprechen leise. Ewig murrt das Hochgebirge. Friedrich Nietzsche denkt an Liebe. Robert Walser lächelt stumm.
Berlin-based poet Monika Rink reading her poem Friedrich Nietzsche Considers Love, a poem we heard translated earlier by Alistair Noon, all part of Poetry Crossings, an event held in Berlin on February 6th, and the subject of this NPR Berlin podcast. We come now to Berlin poet Adrian Nichols, an American living and working in the city and the third of the evening's four poets. Here he is talking with Simon Young before the program.
I'm Adrian Nichols.
Have you been in Berlin for long, and do you find Berlin an inspirational city for poetry?
It's a great city to live in, and I didn't come here looking for inspiration. I came here because I fell in love with a German woman, and I have found a place to work here and make a living and work on my poetry, and so I'm really happy to be in Berlin. It's a really thriving environment, but at the same time, there's a lot of space here for you to try new things out.
And what are you going to be reading?
I'm going to be reading a selection of poems that I've been working on the past several years. A couple of them come from a series called Distant Scales, and a few others that I wrote.
Adrian Nichols has lived in Berlin since 2001. He trained in classical ballet throughout his youth and went on to study the Greek and Latin classics at college. After college, he got a law degree and worked as a lawyer for 5 years before moving to Berlin as a freelance writer, journalist, and translator. He's a frequent contributor of essays and reviews to the Ballet Review and other dance publications. He's currently working on a collection of stories called Berliners. Poetry Crossings is the first public reading of his poetry.
I'd like to start with a poem that I wrote for my grandmother. She died at the same time as I was expecting with my wife, twins, so I didn't make it to her funeral, and I sent this instead. It's called Poem for a Recalcitrant Catholic. Thin eremite, raging with dissatisfaction, willful defier of soundly proven fact, who bests fear and wisdom, which urge me to bow and make do. Nepenthe gnome, who blasts my self-pity, spits on self-righteous charity, and harrows the present earth to guard its future. Let's no joy precipitate as content. Wages fertile war with patience, risks its safety for a dream, makes love to the unknown. I see you now, Janice, akimbo, shadowless in the path of the sun, summoning me to charge heaven through your gates. Answer me. Is your name Hope? A couple of years ago, I started a series called Distant Scales. After about a dozen poems and a verse drama, I felt like I hadn't got much closer to the problem I was struggling with, which was bridging unbridgeable gaps in perspective. So I discontinued it. But I'll read a couple from that series. The first one I wrote for a friend on his 40th birthday, and it's not entirely serious. It's structured as a dialogue between intellect and passion. The prologue to Distant Scales. Intellect starts. "We are greatly prejudiced by our size," quipped he, the tall man. "Without the terrestrial invertebrates to aerate the soil, we should never have learned to farm wheat for ourselves." Passion answers. "You're right. We should invite the vermin to dinner with our children." "The bugs eat well enough on their own. What good would it do you to dine with starry Andromeda, whose cheeks at 10 billion years make yours at 40 look pale?" "What good? She casts by night a luminous shadow on me and stirs deep pools of mystery within. I love her." "Nay, you cannot love what lies beyond your ken." "There it all lies, and I'm fond of women." "Love's vain. And knowledge, illusion. I know the ant neither knows nor loves. Do you?" The next poem I'm going to read is a long one. But before I get on to that, I'd like to thank two beautiful women, Sinja Rosbach and Jana Ciganka, who, talking about their hobbies at the nursery school where my three children go, launched this event. But the poem, I think, needs no introduction. "My father declines to judge the home he loves and the revolution that drove him from it. My mother fled one, jealous of its rot, because she judged in love. I've sought my own for 20 years, and now, in menopause, I know. It's cradled me from birth. My grandfather was born 10th of 10. I was 1st of 1. He fought for every crust of bread. I fought not to have to eat the crust. I thought I was special. You said I was. I can hardly blame you. Now I know that Granddad was. Only he survived to propagate his seed. That privilege I thought I owned was borrowed. It was his and my mother's, whose rebel pride made her true heir to all the great and good embossed on her ancestral coat of arms. Useless metal, nor bulletproof, nor gay, nor mine. You all knew what home was, not because you'd lost it, but because you thought you had. I thought home had made me special. No, home is the commons. I thought home had walls, a roof, and a floor. No, I've carried it with me unawares. It strengthened me through fatigue. I was not wrong to think I am unique, but how? My beginning is arbitrary and my end unknowable. That past and that future of which I form an integral part, but which belongs to everyone but me, that is my home. Why has it taken me so long to know this? I've thrown my eggs singly, month after month, into a place void of passion and sealed. I feared I should have no home to give them. I feared I'd lose myself in him who gave me children, and in them. Now I've lost my children in me. Is it through losing them I found myself? Maybe. But who's to say I should not have found myself through carrying them, not known the commons by allowing him to fill and dissolve me, then known, but truly humbly known, that unique but not fixed point in space that precipitates as me when the weather is right. Without dissolution, I cannot know absence or birth. Can't I lose myself another way? Is there not yet a way for me to know the fabric of the universe? To face, to kiss the little death, and gasp again revived. Let me count the ways, weaving, digging, surveying, climbing, welding, separating. There's no verb, but which in action means a thread of the universe excites a nerve through motion. Through work, I share of me with the commons. Work, like lust, is a perilous thing. It thrives only in balance with repose. Redemption requires release, death. Insight needs work or lust. But death only shows us what we bring to it, what we've grown, trusting that force, both noun and verb, which links work and lust. My faith in that word, for it is a word which drops dead where language ends, will ply lust and bring me to that insight which I cannot know, and which accrues to the benefit of all, but not me, though none would know it were it not for me. And last, I'm going to read a translation of Jan Wagner's poem. In an effort to lend unity to this evening, I went so far as to mistranslate a word in Jan's poem. Most of you probably know the word das Tor as the gate in English. But in the Dartmoor, at least, there are giant rock formations projecting from the mossy earth. And those are called, in England, tors. And I'm sure not all moors have tors, but I can't really exclude the possibility that Jan also wrote his moor poem in the Dartmoor, so it's entirely possible that my translation of tor as tor is correct. I should add, when I were setting this evening up, I asked Jan to send me a poem to translate. He generously sent me six to choose from. They were all so good that I almost wanted to drop out and let Jan read for 40 minutes. As you see, I decided against that. But here's Jan's poem. It was a pleasure. And one more note. The bittern is a wetlands bird related to the heron, but very secretive. You hardly ever see it. And this poem is called Moor Oxen. The bittern eluded me, hidden in the rushes, as the rushes were hiding in her. Forget about her artful nest, sown of light and shadow, resting on cattails. I thought instead of Sculler's herd, which broke through the paling one night and roamed oarless over the moor. Thought of the groaning, which only hours later grew fainter and despairing, then passed. I thought of all those bodies which, sunk deep in the siren bog, floated like zeppelins, big and dumb, while the uncowed fledglings took wing and fled the nest, while we huddled at the tor, shivering, hearkening to the darkness, and said, and wondered, there, that was her, the bittern.
Poet Adrian Nichols, part of his reading at Poetry Crossings, held February 6th at the Studio Nicolescu in Berlin. We heard Adrian Nichols reading his translation of a poem by Jan Wagner, the fourth poet participating in Poetry Crossings. Simon Young spoke with Jan Wagner just before the start of the evening.
Well, my name is Jan Wagner. I'm a poet and a translator of English-American poetry. Charles Simic, James Tait, Matthew Sweeney, the Irish poet, and others. Also, I'm writing reviews for newspapers and essays on poetry. So I'm living for and from poetry.
And what poems have you brought along tonight?
Well, I brought a section of the two last books that appeared, and one new poem which I brought along, which is based on a quote by an English-American poet, Michael Donaghy. So I thought that might fit the evening.
Do you think this is a kind of typical event in Berlin nowadays?
I think so, yeah. I mean, every evening there are at least two or three poetry readings, and more in cafes and clubs than in the official literature houses, although they do readings as well, and good readings too, like the Literaturwerkstatt in Prenzlauer Berg. But I'd say that an even larger number takes place in places like the Studio Niculescu.
Berlin-based poet and translator Jan Wagner. He's the winner of a number of poetry prizes, including the Wilhelm Lehmann Prize and the Friedrich Hölderlin Prize for 2010. Now, to conclude this podcast from Poetry Crossings, here's Jan Wagner reading the poem we just heard translated by Adrian Nichols, entitled Moor Ochsen.
Moor Ochsen. Die Dommel sah ich nie. Versteckt im Schilf, wie sich das Schilf in ihr versteckte. Nie eines ihrer kunstsinnigen Nester. Genäht aus Licht und Schatten. Dachte stattdessen erneut an Vriggers Herde, die eines Abends durch ihr Gatter gebrochen war und sich im Moor verirrte. Das Brüllen, das es Stunden später matter und mutlos wurde, sich am Ende legte. Dachte an all die Körper, die versunken unter dem trügerischen Boden schwebten wie Zeppeline, groß und stumm. Noch als die Jungen die Nester längst verlassen haben mussten, so dass ich, wenn wir uns am Tor versammelten, fröstelnd in das Dunkel lauschten, wusste oder nicht wusste, da, das war sie, die Dommel.
Poet Jan Wagner, the last of four poets participating in the Poetry Crossings, an event bringing together some of Berlin's English poets with their German counterparts. Poetry Crossings took place at the Studio Niculescu, a performance space in Berlin-Kreuzberg. Earlier, we heard Alistair Noon, Monica Rink, and Adrian Nichols. Our thanks to everyone who helped put together the evening, including the moderator, Patricia Klobuschitsky, and Simon Young in Berlin. Our thanks also to Sarah Richards of the NPR Berlin production staff. Thank you for downloading this podcast. We hope you've enjoyed the experience, and we look forward to having you join us for another NPR Berlin special. For Poetry Crossings and NPR Berlin, I'm Jeff Rosenberg.